Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. In podcast 504, a few more thoughts for your Memorial Day weekend as we approach the waypoint in politics, the next waypoint in politics, which is June 7th. And as the moon rises over the deck and we can hear perhaps a storm brewing in the distance, we're going to do a podcast about choices. Now, you've heard me talk about team-building exercises that, I'm so glad I'm in business for myself because I don't have to do that stuff. But honestly, I kind of miss it because it was an opportunity to be social. It was an opportunity to talk to your coworkers, and it was an opportunity, even if it was in the hotel with the bad coffee, that you had to be there at 8 o'clock. Or if you had to go off and jump off a cliff, although I never did that, thank God, or walk across coals. And companies do that kind of stuff, this team building thing. And if you are the person that schedules those things for your company, and if you're a small company, it's probably the CEO, you're probably racking your brain, to find something that is going to be acceptable for all the people that will help build the team, but that isn't just geared for the company athlete that runs every marathon and can walk across coals because he has, calluses on his feet from running barefoot around Lake Calhoun, or the, the Soul Cycle chick that, just is amazing. She's just a beast with Soul Cycle, or the yoga person that isn't scared at all about rock climbing, that kind of thing. So if you suggest new team building exercises for your company, or you're the person, as I said, who has to plan these things, this message is for you. I'm going to tell you how to book a great new, sophisticated, fun way to bond with your employees and build a team. And it's really cool. It's Brush Studio in the West End. Brush Studio events are held in a relaxed and social setting. Everybody has fun. The bottom line is, here's what I want you to do. Go to brushstudio.net or click on their banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page, and you're going to see what they do. It's as simple as an artist guides the team through a featured painting step by step. People come out with a painting, a real painting. It's not paint by numbers. They actually paint a painting. And there is no experience necessary because it's not about the painting. The truth is, people are going to be amazed because these artists that guide these people are amazing, and people are going to be amazed at what they're able to create. But here's the thing. It's a great opportunity for all the people on your team to bond with each other and you without having to walk across coals. Brush Studio events are designed specifically for left brain people so that it brings out the right brain, the creative stuff, and that's where you get the ideas. And it's so much better, as I have said, than spending all day with the cold coffee in the hotel conference room. Now, there's room for 55 people at Brush Studio in the West End, plenty of parking, and when it gets cold again, remember that it's warm because they have the parking underground at the West End. And Brush Studio features over 22 brands of beer and an extensive wine collection. So here's what you do. Check out the Brush Studio banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. That takes you to their page, and you can see there's video on there, and you can see what they do. Or you can reach out directly to Brush Studio at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700, Brush Studio. And thanks, Brush Studio, for being the exclusive sponsor of this podcast. So yeah, out here on the deck, and I do think that it's possible a storm is starting to brew because I did just see a little bit of lightning, and because I have all this equipment out here on the deck, I've got to check because if it starts to rain really fast, I'm gonna have a real problem with my mixer and my computer and my microphone and everything else out here. So this isn't the USB mic. This is the whole, guts of the studio pulled out and put up on the deck, which I love to do. I mean, it takes me an hour to set this whole thing up, but it's really fun. So I'm out here on the deck. This is the last podcast I'll do before Memorial Day, except for the original content for the Bob Davis Podcast radio show, which airs Saturday at 4 p.m. on The Patriot, which I'll also post here at the Bob Davis Podcast and at GCNLive.com. So that is coming up. But I didn't want to just leave. I didn't want to do one podcast before Memorial Day and the end of May. I wanted to do a little bit more because today I had some, going on and continuing with this effort to sort of listen to my thoughts and view my reactions to things. So this is a sort of a companion to the Memorial Day weekend podcast. And it's kind of a companion to the Slipping Into Summer podcast because it's done from the deck as well. But I mentioned in that podcast that politics is really hard to talk about these days. And then I got into this whole thing about thinking about this. I was thinking about saying that in the podcast, in podcast 503. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm going to do a podcast about that, because why would I have a negative reaction to Facebook posts from people who went to the conventions, you know, the state conventions, or news articles that I'm seeing, or Twitter? Because I'm continuing to kind of just really kind of stay in the loop on what is going on. And why would I have a negative reaction to that? Because I guess maybe it provoked thoughts about Memorial Day as a waypoint in this process. And Memorial Day really isn't a waypoint in the process, but, you know, politically speaking, but it's certainly a waypoint because it's a moment that we all pause. And so we might all be sitting around talking about politics or thinking about politics this weekend because we'll have a little bit of time off. The next official waypoint is going to be June 7th, which is the week after next, I think, when the last primaries are held for Republicans and Democrats. So we have California, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, and South Dakota for both Republicans and Democrats. And then we have North Dakota for Democrats. And also for Democrats, the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico hold a caucus and primary, respectively, on Saturday, June 4th. The Puerto Rico primary will be interesting because, of course, the Puerto Ricans are looking for a bailout from the federal government because they've mismanaged their money for so long. I think that's important because if they bail out Puerto Rico, now the rules regarding territories versus states, I would imagine, are a little different. But if they bail out Puerto Rico, then should they bail out Illinois, which is the next basket case that is coming? If you've done any reading about, as we used to call it, Hellanoi, then you'll understand that there's a huge issue with pensions and budgeting and everything else with the state of Illinois, and also California and some of these other states like New York and New Jersey, where they have pretty high levels of pension obligations. But that's another podcast. Just about everything being reported on currently is pretty much useless, which is why I think I wanted to do this podcast. The big question here is whether Bernie Sanders is going to win California. And when we talk about Democrats, let's talk about this for a second, because while the action has sort of moved away from the Republicans, even though Donald Trump continues to get headlines saying things, and it's funny how the media really, really doesn't want to report on it. Barbara Boxer got into a big fight with Bernie, with the Bernie Sanders supporters. Bill Clinton got into a fight with the Bernie Sanders supporters. I don't know if it was in California or not. Democrats, and especially establishment Democrats, it's hard to believe that we're saying that, of Hillary Clinton and Barbara Boxer and Bill Clinton, are not used to being challenged by people in their own party. But that is what is happening. And the question and the thing that people are focusing on is the question of whether Bernie Sanders can win California, whether he can win New Jersey, and whether he can win New Mexico. Any one of those is big news. If it's California, it's really big news. If it's California and New Jersey or all three, then it might cause some of these superdelegates to start questioning Hillary Clinton's role as the inevitable nominee for the Democrats. I hate these words like inevitable and presumptive, because nothing is inevitable or presumptive in politics. And as an aside, I don't think that this – there's two things. First of all, I think if I'm a Democrat, I'm going to view Bernie Sanders as the logical successor to Barack Obama, who is really, aside from Woodrow Wilson and Teddy Roosevelt, truly the first progressive president that we've had in a long time. And so if you're a Democrat, I don't see Democrats as really feeling an affinity to, especially when you consider what they believe in, you know, and what they're for. And this isn't meant to be derogatory. This is, you know, giving them the credit that they deserve. Democrats elected Barack Obama twice, you know, and if he served two terms and will be out of office on January 17th, whenever it is. And, you know, the successor to that president, you know, Hillary Clinton, really isn't cut from the same cloth as Barack Obama. But Bernie Sanders is, and I think he's a logical successor to Barack Obama. I don't know that the Democratic Party sees it that way, but I think that's important. The second thing is, everybody is now talking about the State Department audit concluding that Mrs. Clinton violated, Secretary Clinton violated federal regulations by having her own email server, in the bathroom at her condo or whatever it was. I don't think it hurts her very much because the other person that they cited, one of the other people that they cited was Colin Powell, who didn't go so far as to have his own email server in his bathroom, but he certainly had email sent to and had another email address. So I don't know that that makes it a moot point, but I don't expect Hillary Clinton to be persecuted. Well, she will be persecuted, but I doubt that she'll be prosecuted for this. Anyway, the thing that's interesting about it is they ought to change her name to Hillary Clinton email, because every time you see the name Hillary Clinton, you see the words email. You see the word email written next to her name and then the rest of the headline of whatever the email scandal is going to show. So it's very interesting, but I don't know that that's going to hurt her. I think the energy behind Bernie Sanders and the idea that Bernie Sanders would be the natural successor to Barack Obama hurts her more than almost anything else. She is a 90s chick, and Bill Clinton is a 70s guy. And between the two of them, they represent yesterday and not today. So it'll be interesting to see if the Democrats settle on Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders. And so the next spate of primaries for the Democrats are absolutely critical. And I will talk more about the fissures in the Democratic Party later in this podcast, because it is time to start talking about them. If Clinton wins California, well, then it's all over, I think, for Bernie at that point, because the superdelegates aren't going to risk breaking with the Clintons unless there's a reason for it. So on the Republican side, I don't think there's any chance that Trump is going to lose the last few state primaries. I suppose it will be a question of how delegates are allocated and who's still on the ballot left, and what those state conventions end up doing and what he actually ends up going to the convention with in terms of delegates. So I would still not call Donald Trump the presumptive nominee until he is the nominee. And it's so interesting because delegates have yet to decide who the nominee will be, and all the major news outlets refer to Trump as the Republican nominee, and he hasn't been nominated yet. So suddenly the Republican side of the fence isn't as much fun as it used to be, as I said in the previous podcast, unless the presumptive nominee for the Republicans calls someone a name and manages to get himself an hour or two of television time on failing news networks like MSNBC, or whether there's a big fight at the convention and something comes up. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit. What are the takeaways to think about this weekend after you've put the dock in and you're sitting there with your brother-in-law with either a cup of coffee or a beer or a bottle of Jack Daniels?
I have coffee.
So that's, I'm stuck with coffee at this point. Well, there's still drama. And, you know, it may suddenly be muted in the Republican ranks, but drama nonetheless. First of all, we won't be able to count the delegates until they arrive in Cleveland, because you still have people working for Cruz who are fighting to get delegates. And so we don't really know what the delegate count is going to be. It's fair to say that it's probably, you know, that Trump will probably have the required number, but I don't really want to make that statement. And I think that's one of the things that sets me apart from all of these predictors of the future with their tarot cards, because we don't know what's going to happen until it happens. We can presume, but that's presumptuous, right? I mean, we're presuming. We're not really talking about hard facts. And hard facts like who is the nominee versus who is said to be the nominee are the things that are in short supply right now. The other big story right now is that Paul Ryan is playing a dangerous game by not coming out with a full-throated endorsement of Trump, but then turning around and attacking Clinton. And it makes me wonder what he's up to, if anything. Now, by the time you hear this podcast, he may have come out and endorsed Trump. I don't know. We'll have to see. But here's the thing that happens with media these days. And I noticed this just this last weekend when I was just looking through some stuff. These days, you end up having, so if you get to pull up a story from Politico or pull up a story from whatever, you actually have to look up the reporter's Wikipedia page to determine the pedigree of that reporter, and it's very revealing. There was an article this weekend on Politico that said, U.S. is ready for a third party, and I noticed the guy's name, and it doesn't matter what his name was, but I looked it up, and this guy is one of the founders of the Bush Foundation. So suddenly now the people that used to decry a third party the establishment Republicans used to say poo-poo a third party, you know, or poo-poo an independent party, are suddenly writing articles about how suddenly the United States is written by a third is ready for a third party. And the story was written in such a way, the only fact was that there are high negatives for both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, which I'm going to tell you statistically doesn't mean anything. And here's why. The reason it doesn't mean anything, this actually might be a long podcast, by the way. I'm getting into this now. The reason it doesn't mean anything is because if you have high familiarity, generally speaking, you have high negatives. It's the nature of the beast. People who are relatively unknown who become famous very quickly have very low negatives. People who have been famous for a while generally have higher negatives. It's one of the reasons presidents have higher negatives, because people have gotten to know them enough to have an opinion about them. Believe it or not, this is one of the ways that television stations, television networks measure whether or not television anchors are okay. They used to call it the tube, and I've talked about this a little bit. This is the statistical range where positives and negatives sort of balance out, and you want people that are in the tube. I'm willing to bet that Hillary Clinton as well as Donald Trump are both in the tube. So this guy's basis for arguing that the country's ready for a third party, that these two people have high negatives. And the thing that I guess I'm trying to point out here is that, in fact, high negatives aren't bad unless they're overwhelming. Another way, we used to test current songs, okay? And when a current song became a hit, what would happen is it's – so if we ask people, do you like, dislike, do you strongly like, strongly – you know, moderately like, moderately dislike, or strongly dislike a song, for lack of a better term. Usually it was on a scale of 1 to 5 or a scale of 1 to 10. And the person would say, God, I really like that song. And then we would ask if they were tired of it or not. And if they'd had high tired of up to 50%, it was no problem. Keep playing it. Above 50%, you would pull it down in rotation so it didn't get played as much. So high negatives are not necessarily a bad thing. Even people saying dislike, you would find with hit records, you would find high numbers of dislike as well as high numbers of like. It just depended on where you were in the tube. So that's a little weird sort of operational statistical thing. I just find it fascinating that a guy who was one of the founders of the Bush Foundation would find it necessary to write an article talking about how the country's ready for a third party because there are negatives associated with Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. He has to know, because anybody in politics knows that high negatives aren't necessarily a negative. Okay. Sorry for that little departure, but I had to get that out. So again, you have to look up the reporter's byline to get the name of the guy and look it up to find out what's going on there. So obviously, this guy feels the need to write an article about how we're ready for a third party, which serves the needs of the Republican establishment. It's one of the reasons I don't trust Paul Ryan. It's one of the reasons I don't trust Mitt Romney. It's one of the reasons I'm not willing to say that Donald Trump is the quote-unquote presumptive nominee. I still want to know why Ted Cruz pulled out so precipitously and has literally disappeared from the scene. I think that's very weird and interesting. Kasich, I could understand because he really never really had much. I don't understand why Cruz didn't continue. There were only a few more primaries left. I don't understand why he couldn't have continued to stay in the game. Something is going on, and I'm not quite sure what it is, but that's one of the takeaways from all this, in my view. So I'm not ready to say that that this is a done deal with Donald Trump at the Republican National Convention, and who knows what'll happen if he isn't nominated, but I'm just saying right now there's a lot of unanswered questions, and it's one of the takeaways from this. I just have to mention this. David K. Johnson, who's written a lot of stuff about Wall Street, put a piece, and I think it was in Politico, which said the headline was Trump's Mob Ties. And there really wasn't too much detail in there, but I do want to say this. I think you're going to see an increase in the velocity and the intensity of those kinds of articles in the next few weeks as we get closer and closer to these conventions in the latter half of the summer of 2016, even though we are literally on the cusp of the first few hours of summer as I speak, because we're almost to Memorial Day weekend, and it's summer out here. I mean, listen to this. It's fabulous. Okay. We have all these quote-unquote establishment Republicans, and it seems so funny to call Eric Erickson an establishment Republican, Eric Erickson from Red State, but they're all out there waiting in the wings trying to figure out what they're going to coalesce around, and I just can't see them coalescing around Trump. So there's going to be some kind of attempt to do something along the lines of, you know, getting somebody else nominated or hog-tying Trump in some way, shape, or form. He just fired one of his top people because of a conflict with his inner circle versus the outer circle, which is sort of some of these people that were a little bit more establishment. So we'll have to see what goes down. Anyway, we'll have to see. Again, Donald Trump might actually be the nominee, you know, and maybe he should be the nominee, but he isn't until he is actually nominated. So stop calling him presumptive and stop calling Hillary Clinton inevitable or presumptive until the delegates actually vote and elect to nominate one of the other two or whatever they decide to do at their conventions. So then there's all this talk about unity among Republicans, and I want to talk about this a little bit. This is another thing that upset me, is one of the posts I saw from one of the national committeemen that was elected at the Minnesota Republican State Convention was, you know, we got to get unified because we got to win everything. If we get unified, we're going to win everything. And I thought to myself, win what? And unity around what? And this is the thing that's interesting to me about Republicans right now. What exactly does Donald Trump stand for? Are you, and I'm going to ask this question of people listening, are you feeling like, you know what, I'm going to support this guy because I really believe in what he stands for? What does he stand for? He's going to bring factory jobs back to the United States? Is that what you're supporting? Now, I suppose if you're a coal worker, he could probably do something about that by simply reversing some of the stuff that Obama's done with executive orders related to environment and coal. But when it comes to factory jobs coming back to the United States, I just want to mention a couple of things. I saw a story tonight that Foxconn, which makes the iPhone, it is just replacing 60, among other things, they replaced 60,000 workers in China, which is nothing, but it's still a lot of workers. 60,000 workers in China with robots. And this is just the beginning. If they can find robots to make iPhones and replace workers at any level of the manufacturing process with iPhones, it's just the beginning. I was talking to somebody this week, and they were talking about how contractors can't find tradesmen. They are still working with guys that they've worked with for years, baby boomers, who are trying to be semi-retired, but they're coming out and working because they can't find any young people who want to be carpenters. Nobody wants to be a plumber. Nobody wants to be a carpenter. And if nobody wants to be a plumber and carpenter, these are really highly skilled trades and pretty high pay for the most part if you are highly skilled. Then who do you expect is going to want to work at a factory? Yet walling up the country and preventing anyone from coming in from the outside is somehow now a Republican idea. Moreover, bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. through trade protectionism is suddenly now a Republican idea. And these things, you know, Ronald Reagan was a free trader. He was most decidedly not a protectionist. Protectionism is an old line Democratic idea, and I'm willing to bet that Bernie Sanders is just as protectionist as Donald Trump. Again, these are traditionally not Republican ideals or ideas, and yet people are talking about unity around Donald Trump, and he is really pushing this idea of protectionism. Does that mean he's a protectionist? I don't know. I have no idea. But it doesn't seem to me that anybody really cares because they want to unify around someone who can win the argument, who's going to win. That is what Republicans care about, winning, which is very sad in a lot of ways. And it's why I say words like conservative and liberal are meaningless, especially when you talk about Republicans. And it's why I say that Republican and Democrat are essentially meaningless as well, because the Democrats are not Democrats. They are not capitalists. So here's what has happened in my view. People who registered as Republicans to vote in this primary cycle, that's an important distinction. People who registered as Republicans to vote in this primary cycle would suggest, given their votes, that they have settled on Donald Trump as the presidential candidate. A much smaller group of voters wanted the evangelical and self-described constitutionalist Ted Cruz, and a still smaller group of Republicans voted for what could be referred to as establishment candidates like John Kasich and Jeb Bush and so forth, Rubio. So the pools of public opinion in the Republican Party, what is perceived as conservative in this country, and I think incorrectly, are populists, or maybe we should just call them Trumpists, people who want someone who can win the argument, as I said, especially if it means coming up with cute names and nasty jokes about the opponent, which, by the way, is fair game in politics. And people keep saying that he's this horrible person, but this is the nature of politics. What he's doing is defining his opponents. And you may not like it, but that's part of the deal. Someone who will stop the flow of illegal immigrants and stop allowing Muslim refugees from entering the U.S. Someone who will make the government work again, which is what Make America Great sort of means. But again, those are not, you know, truly conservative ideas. That's just someone who's going to make the state work better. And by the way, Barack Obama said he was going to do that. Someone who is going to turn the international system on its ear. Maybe it needs to be turned on its ear, but without knowing what it's going to be replaced with. That is, I hate to say dangerous, but let's just say that's a risky proposition. A sticky wicket. Someone who will defend the police and the armed forces. People feel that, some people in this country feel that the police are getting it raw. Deal and that the armed forces need to be defended and the police need to be defended and the first responders need to be defended. And maybe they do. I don't know. I'm just saying this is what I think Trump represents. And by the way, I'm not going to sit here and try to explain why Trump. This is another thing that all of the pundits and the writers are all trying to explain why people are voting for Trump. I have no idea. I'm just telling you this populist pool, for lack of a better term, and I hate that term too. So I'm going to call it this Trumpist pool. This is just one of the pools, and it's the largest pool of Republican voters in the primary season. It's one of the reasons they've been able to settle on Trump. And the last few things that Trump represents, I think, is someone who's going to slow down all these trade agreements. So the United States, quote unquote, gets what it wants and starts, quote unquote, winning again. Not someone that's going to change the way we trade or change the monetary system or change any of these other things. It's someone who's just going to make what we've got work better for us. Someone to set China and Russia straight, especially China. And so why? Because China took all of our jobs. And so we need a president who's going to set these Chinese straight on how they can't take our jobs anymore. That's a 10 podcast to talk about there. That's one pool. And then there is the establishment pool, which is a very small pool. This is people who want to return to decency in politics. This is someone who's going to make sure that the government works properly again. Someone who's going to, quote unquote, fix the economy and knows how to fix the economy because they're Romney or they're whatever. A throwback to Reagan, or someone who's going to make sure that people who are in power, especially in the House and Senate and in local legislatures, stay in power. So establishment, you know, we don't need to be making any crazy changes. We just need good stewards, for lack of a better term. And then you have this, that's a very small pool. And then a slightly smaller pool than the populist pool or the Trumpist pool is the evangelical pool. This is different from libertarians. They want to use the Constitution to make sure no gays get married and that there isn't any questions about the bathrooms, but it will all be constitutional. And if you think I'm kidding, I'm telling you, I'm not. This is their core issue. This is the evangelical Catholic. This is the evangelical Protestant. They're most concerned about two things: Muslims and gays. And I'm not suggesting that they're racist or xenophobic or anything else. I'm saying these are the issues they care most about. And if you're one of them, you deserve respect for what you're concerned most about, but this is the evangelical core. It's someone who wants to see respect for Jesus Christ brought back to the White House, because the White House doesn't respect Jesus right now, according to them. And I say, okay, maybe you're right. And I'm not judging these pools, but it's a smaller pool than the Trumpist pool. And then finally, the smallest pool is the libertarian pool. This is the old Ron Paul contingent, small numbers that came out for Rand Paul, but not really. So I don't know what happened to the libertarians. Maybe they went to the Libertarian Party. The only group that generally and genuinely wants to reduce the size and power of the federal, state, and local governments is this libertarian Ron Paul group. They don't have much of an opinion about gays and bathrooms. They don't support the internationalist foreign policy arguments. they have never defined to their detriment what the U.S. defensive perimeter extends to and how we would defend it. But I do think they have great economic ideas. They have classic economic ideas, classic capitalist economic ideas, von Mises and Murray Rothbard and, you know, so forth. And for that reason, I think they are really the soul of the Republican Party, and none of the other groups are the soul of the Republican Party. And by the way, libertarians are not conservatives. They are, in fact, liberals. They are the classic liberals, and they're the true classic liberals, not Mitt Romney. So, you know, the word statist sort of, you know, creeped into our political lexicon because of the Ron Paul people, and they deserve a lot of credit for that. So none of that is really what I consider old school Republican, which is why I say the Reagan coalition and the old Reagan conservative ideas that animated the Republican Party in the 1980s is as dead as he is. And by extension, this is why the Republican Party is dead, even if Donald Trump wins the presidency, and maybe especially if Donald Trump wins the presidency, which, by the way, is very possible if he manages to get the nomination. That is the last hurdle that he has to get over, and I think that he has a very good chance of being president, especially if the Democrats nominate Hillary Clinton. What kind of president would Donald Trump be? And this is going to be the next thing you're going to hear all these people talking about and writing about. What kind of president will he be? Before he's even nominated, we're talking about what kind of president he's going to be. I have no idea, and I wouldn't speculate at this point. I think we should wait and see what happens. I think we should wait and see who's nominated. I think we should wait and see who actually wins the election before we start talking about what kind of president this guy's going to be, because I don't think anybody knows. And I think it's also true with Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. Now, I promised I would talk about Democrats, and I'm going to, as this plane goes over, I want to talk about the Democrat side for a little while here before we get to the end of the podcast. The establishment, and I'm talking about the Democrat establishment, in my view, is trying to shove a political operative and 90s first lady down the throat of a party that has moved far to the left of the old new left that produced Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter, the old Gene McCarthy new left. Remember, this is what the riot was all about in Chicago, the anti-war left, the Bobby Kennedy and Gene McCarthy group that was the McGovern group that was sort of making an effort, the young college students who wanted to see an end to the Vietnam War and wanted to see a new Democratic Party. They produced Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, and the Clintons were supposed to be the people that exemplified the new left. But in fact, they are now old school, and they are now establishment. They are the Democratic Party's George W. Bush and Jeb Bush and George H.W. Bush. And I think it's kind of funny, because the left is now a reactionary left, for lack of a better term, and they are flat-out socialists. They want universal health care. They want universal education. They want to change the American political system to become a parliamentary system. They want to get rid of the Electoral College. They want to break up the big banks, but don't let them fail when they make a mistake. Just bail them out and then own them. And don't sell Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the process. They want sky-high corporate taxes and taxes on the rich, because rich people should just pay because they're rich. They're bad people, and they got rich by being evil, and so let's just tax them. They want regulation to prevent companies from leaving the country, which probably won't work, but they'll still do it. They want tight controls on Wall Street, which also won't work. They want special classes and consideration for all minority groups, which will eventually include everyone who is not heterosexual, male, and white. And I know that's harsh, but that's the fact. This is a very racist group of people who don't like white males, plain and simple. If you don't believe me, look up mansplaining and look up Black Lives Matter and listen to the rhetoric, and you can only come to that conclusion. It's reverse misogyny. I don't even know what that is. And it's reverse racism and 100 other ideas that are actually ideas that add up to the final few steps that we will have to take in the United States to complete our transformation from a capitalist republic to a socialist parliamentary republic, which we can do. I don't know if it's going to be a good thing. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know that we will become Venezuela, but I don't think it's going to work very well. And I think it would be stillborn just because of the nature of the political system in the United States. But we can certainly make an effort. And if Bernie Sanders is elected, we will. The new left, and I'm talking about the Bernie Sanders supporters, the people I've just been talking about, hate Hillary Clinton. They hate her more than Republicans. They will do anything to see that she isn't nominated. There are lots of people talking about the fireworks at the Republican convention. I'm one of them. But the fact is that the Democratic convention has the potential to be Chernobyl in comparison because of the degree of intensity. Bill Clinton got into a 30-minute fight with the Bernie Sanders supporters. They shouted down Barbara Boxer. So this is really a significant change in the Democratic Party. And as I said at the beginning of the podcast, I see Bernie Sanders more as the intellectual and spiritual successor to Barack Obama, not Hillary Clinton. I think Hillary Clinton is a step backward for Democrats. And I think part of the problem with her is that she's so 90s. I don't think anybody in the Democratic Party wants to go back to the 90s. So we are faced, and this is the final thought, with two alternatives, unless a miracle intervenes, and I don't see a miracle. In other words, I don't see planet Nibiru appearing anytime soon. I don't see a stroke of lightning coming down from the heavens. If it does, it does. But we have either Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, who will continue to build a parliamentary and socialist edifice on top of a representative market-based capitalist legal framework, to whatever degree they have success in their, in the eyes of the people that elect them, they will, just as Barack Obama has done with executive orders and as Democrats did with passing Obamacare and the stimulus packages. If the Democrats gain a majority in the Senate and Bernie Sanders is elected president, we're going to move in that direction. If the Democrats gain a majority in the Senate and Hillary Clinton is elected president, both things very possible, then all three things very possible, then we are going to be moving in that direction, whether you want to or not, Ted Cruz supporter, or whether you want to or not, Donald Trump supporters. The other option is another candidate in the form of Donald Trump, who just says he's going to fix everything and is very rhetorical and can win the argument over the back fence. But we don't know what he wants to do, really, and philosophically, and he doesn't know either. So the takeaway here is that Republicans went out and got involved. This is what people like me said people needed to do. And they did what people have been saying, that Republicans had to do for years, which is go out and vote in the primaries, go out and vote in the caucuses, get involved. And in return, the Republican Party said, we're going to come up with 17 or 19 or whatever number of candidates so that you can choose from every sliver of opinion within the party. And in the end, we had two possible paths to choose from. And one is the evangelical constitutionalism in the form of the Ted Cruz people, which is a very narrow group of people and is small. Look at the number of primaries he won. Look at the percentages he won by. Or Trumpism in the form of Donald Trump, which is to say nothing, just rhetoric, just a quick, return on some statement or a funny, he's good media, he makes good media. And then that's what we've got. Those are the choices that the Republican Party came up with, and those are the choices that Republicans settled on. And I don't think that needs much elaboration. That's it. If you're upset about politics, if you're concerned about the future, that's one piece of this that you just need to remember and think about. That of all of the people that were put up, Republicans settled on Donald Trump. People who call themselves conservatives settled on Donald Trump, and to a lesser extent, Ted Cruz. Now, on the Democrat side, for their part, they went out and did what they always do. They organized and they came up with a socialist, interventionist, statist, former senator and secretary of state, and her former president husband, and a guy who calls himself a socialist Democrat, but is in fact a socialist, or I like to call him an Uber socialist, which is kind of a play on words since the Democrats don't like Uber. And in the form of sitting Senator Bernie Sanders. What's the choice there? What is the choice in November if those are the choices? Now, there are third parties, and I will talk about them as we get closer to the election, and of course fourth parties. But the mainline party voters so far have produced three or four candidates who stand for, on one side, essentially statism, and a much more aggressive statism, and on the other side, statism. That's how I see it. what about technology and the growth of technology and creating this Jeffersonian republic that allows people to be freed to pursue their own businesses and to grow their own businesses using all this new technology like 3D printing and, apps that you can order up cabs and doctors and everything else on? What about China and the future defense vulnerabilities of the U.S.? What about the EU? What about cutting regulation, corporate taxes, and individual taxes? What about reducing the thicket of regulation and the legal framework that allows for a burgeoning and growing federal government bureaucracy in the form of the IRS and the EPA and the HEW and the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, HEW, right, and HUD, Housing and Urban Development, and on and on and on, the Department of Transportation and all of that stuff. What about Obamacare and replacing Obamacare with being able to sell insurance policies across the country and go online and order an insurance policy from wherever you want for the best price? What about the Federal Reserve? And what are we going to do about the Federal Reserve? What about the foreign policy of the United States as it pertains to the two current wars we're fighting on the books, which we've been fighting for over 10 years, and the several that we're fighting off the books, like the one in Western Iraq and Syria? What about metals-based currency? What about immigration and dealing with immigration? What about ceding authority back to the states and in turn the state ceding authority back to the counties and towns and villages? And the list of real issues that need to be solved, whether it is the legal power of the Met Council in Minneapolis and St. Paul to tell local communities what to do, whether it is whether or not private-public partnerships are legal, whether it is the Electoral College, whether it is, I mean, I could go on and on and on. We're not talking about any of that stuff. None of that is going to be on the ballot in November. It doesn't matter who the nominees are. Republicans and Democrats went out and got involved. So we really can't criticize because they went out and got involved. And this is what they came up with, right? So who's going to win this thing? Well, whoever, whatever is correct English, I don't know. And this is what drives me crazy about the media, because they're busy telling us who's going to win and what the chances are. And the polls show this and the poll. It's all nonsense because they have nothing to talk about. What are they going to do when they become president? We don't know, because we don't know what kind of challenges we're going to be facing in January of 2017. We don't know what's going to happen between now and the election, because we don't know what kind of international things are going to happen, what kinds of things could happen. What happens if an earthquake hits California and it falls into the ocean? What happens if there's a war? What happens if there's a gigantic tornado that sucks Omaha up into it and sets it down in the middle of, I don't know, North Dakota or something? I guess it wouldn't make any difference. But you see, we don't know what's going to happen because we can't predict the future. Regardless of the tarot cards and the astrology readers and the guys who say global warming means this, that, and the other thing, and science says we can't predict the future. So the problems of the future remain in the future. They remain a question. A plan for the future remains a question. So you can see why then it is frustrating to a person who wants to see that. I want to see plans for the future. I want to see substantive discussion of issues. It isn't going to happen. If you want that, it isn't going to happen. Hearing Republicans talk about unity, hearing Democrats talk about business, both of those are hilarious to me. It's pure comedy. Hearing the so-called down ticket talk about what they're going to do. The down ticket at this point, those guys are on their own. All of them are on their own. And who knows what's going to happen with the makeup of the House and the Senate, because no one's paying any attention to that. We're talking about what Donald Trump said today. Is it depressing? I don't know. I suppose, or you could just say you're only depressed about it because you read too much of that stuff or you're too interested in it. It's not really depressing because it is what it is. We just have to wait and see how it comes out. But here's the bottom line. People don't know, and I hate to quote Donald Rumsfeld, but we don't know what we don't know. People just don't know what they don't know. So it's hard to tell whether Americans are making these decisions from an informed place or whether they're making these decisions from a deeply uninformed place. And you're going to hear that argument as an explanation for Donald Trump. Well, people really don't know what they don't know, so they really don't know how badly informed they are, and they really don't know how incompetent they are, which is an argument for, you know, not letting people vote anymore, right, and suppressing the vote. But we really don't know what we don't know, so we don't know if we're ignorant. You know, the idea is that people may be stupid individually, but somehow they make the right choice. I don't know if that's true. That's kind of a truism, really, or a shibboleth, as they say. We'll have to see. But they are going to choose someone. The American people, we're going to choose someone to be president. They're not just going to leave the office vacant with a sign that says renovating, you know, pardon our dust. Someone is going to be chosen to lead the executive branch of the U.S. government. And, you know, a good one-third of the Senate is going to be chosen, and the entire House of Representatives is going to be chosen. And those people will write the next chapter of U.S. history. Until then, we wait. So that's it. Those are just some thoughts to think about, to sort of take away for your Memorial Day weekend. And maybe that'll start an argument. It's hard to tell. Well, I went on and on about Brush Studio earlier in this podcast. So let me just tell you, if you are the person that schedules these corporate events for team building, you really ought to check out Brush Studio, because they can do a really cool event. They are event planning ninjas. Your people are going to love it. Brush Studio in the West End. They've got 22 brands of beer and an extensive wine collection. Reach out to them at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Or check them out online at brushstudio.net. Or you can just click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, and it will take you to the Brush Studio page, and you'll find out all about Brush Studio. I love those guys. And I hope you check them out. Shout outs to our digital sponsor of the Bob Davis podcast, Alpha Systems. This is for pilots. If you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, if you want to get there safely, and pilots do, they want to get there, but they want to get there safely. Listen up, because Alpha Systems is the manufacturer of the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. In fact, they invented it. They created the angle of attack revolution because it saves lives. Alpha Systems AOA is FAA approved. They want to get it into your plane right away. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. It takes you to their website. There's tons of content on there about lives who have been saved, how it works, the new systems, and what it will do for you as a pilot, because having a visual indicator of your angle of attack when you turn on final approach is literally a lifesaver. Alpha Systems. Thanks for listening to podcast 504 on Stitcher.com. Tune in, the granddaddy of podcasting, iTunes, which I still love. I was at some networking thing, and I was talking to somebody, and she goes, "Oh, let's check out your podcast." And we went to iTunes, and she was like, "Oh, my God, you have 5 stars. That's great." I love iTunes. And also blogtalkradio.com. And thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show on GCNlive.com and also at AM 1280 The Patriot at 4 p.m. on Saturdays, and more affiliates as I get them. And I really appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, and also on Instagram. And I changed the name of my Instagram handle so you can find it easier. It is actually thebobdavispodcasts.com on Instagram. And I posted a bunch of... Mitch and I were running around here last night like crazy men, and I posted a bunch of pictures as well as some dandelion fire from our little, fooling around in the dark, doing crazy, acting like teenagers the other night. So that's on Instagram. And thanks again for checking all that stuff out. And thanks for donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. You click on the donate button. You can use PayPal to donate $1 or $100 or $200 or $1,000 to Mobile Podcast Command. And that gets us repairs and tires and fills up the tank and loads up the Komodo Dragon coffee and the beef jerky for this summer operations. And I'm planning those as we speak. All right, I've gone on too long. Thanks for listening. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. Thanks for listening to podcast 504, the Bob Davis Podcasts.